Need a bed? A sofa? A table? A chair? Some wainscoting? Lights? Basically anything for your home? Well, you might have landed at online retailer Wayfair. The Boston-based company began 14 years ago, the brainchild of Niraj Shah and Steve Conine. And we met with them earlier this summer at their sprawling, truly sprawling offices in Copley Square. And we asked them by asking, we started by asking them what sets Wayfair apart from, say, the Amazons and the eBays of the online world. And the first voice you'll hear is of Steve Conine.
You know, from a customer standpoint, I think they will see our sites are more visually interesting to shop. And then I think from a logistics fulfillment standpoint, they'll see that we're one of the best people filling this particular type of good as well. A lot of the other e-commerce guys got started earlier in smaller goods or things that are easy to ship, easy to describe, don't get damaged. We've gotten particularly good at dealing with bigger, bulkier, more complicated products. I think both of us having engineering backgrounds probably, you know, given us kind of that edge to kind of get into dealing with the complexity that this particular category requires.
Well, so tell me more about that. I mean, what is the complexity when you have to, you know, ship giant couches, sinks, you know,
sure,
desks?
Yeah. Well, I think it starts, you know, everyone has very different products in their home. So you need to be able to provide a massive selection. Well, doing that, it kind of inherently is, it requires you to build out a supply chain, which looks very different than one for mass merchandise where you can stock it in lots of warehouses all around the country. Our products tend to be stocked at very few warehouses. And so getting the infrastructure to pull out of all those warehouses and give people the selection they want is really complicated because you're compelling lots of vendors all over the country to deliver things to your service quality. And it's a product that oftentimes it takes more than one person to move around. So when it shows up at someone's home, moving it into the home, moving it, you know, into the location where it needs to be, is a lot more difficult than just leaving it on the front stoop.
And the user, the customer, also has a lot more invested because the price point for some of these products just inherently is higher. Like a sofa is more expensive to buy than a battery, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the customer wants it to be right the first time.
Well, absolutely. You know, that's a really interesting point because on one hand, you're right. These are higher ticket purchases. Therefore, there's a lot more consideration and thought that goes into them. But I think one of the things we offer that's really compelling for folks is that we actually offer sofas with free delivery that start as low as $300. So part of what we're doing is we're offering not just more selection, not just better visual merchandising, but at very, very attainable price points. So in other words, not only are you getting a great experience, but you're not having to pay a premium for it. I think that's a big piece of it.
So when was it that the two of you came up with this idea or identified this sector as a place where there was a business opportunity?
So Steve and I met in college, and we graduated from Cornell together in 95, and we ended up starting our first company together right out of college. And so long story short, in 2002, when we were deciding what we wanted to do next, we were debating ideas, and conventional wisdom was not very supportive of e-commerce. We ended up believing that there's a very big opportunity, and we thought you had to pick a category that was not necessarily already owned. And that's what led us into furniture.
I read that you guys were sitting in a room of one of your houses and sort of looking around and doing your market analyses there. Is that right?
Yeah, we started this in a little house in or a little room in my house. It's now been my nursery, and yeah, we debate whether we should do prepaid calling cards or vitamins or birdhouses or other, you know, different categories. And ultimately, ended up feeling like furniture and a lot of the furniture categories had a lot of opportunity for us.
Yeah, and you started with stereo racks, is that right?
Yeah, speaker stands.
Categories,
which, yeah. So plasma TVs were just becoming popular in the early 2000s. And then, you know, surround sound was a big thing. And people needed these little stands to put their speakers on. It was a category that took off. And then sort of it became a beachhead that led us into other categories sort of adjacent to that.
Yeah. You know, you said after starting your first business right out of Cornell and the founding of what became Wayfair, you said long story short. But I feel like there's great stories in that time because you were both engineering students at Cornell, right?
We were, yeah. I was mechanical. Neeraj was civil environmental. We actually met the summer before our freshman year. We were both up there as high school students doing a summer sort of, you know, summer program at Cornell. And then we ended up at dorm room apart that year.
Dorm room apart, so you were neighbors in the
same
dorm.
Yeah, we were neighbors. So the random assignment system that Cornell's whatever computer science group came up with is largely responsible for the freshman design.
Good match. The algorithm did a good match. Why do you think the two of you clicked so quickly?
I guess a good question about how one picks their friend. But I don't have a great answer to that.
Similar ethics and values. And I think we both, like, you know, we're both hard workers. We both, you know, knew how to have fun in life, I think, and knew how to balance sort of, I don't know, or had a similar way of balancing sort of working hard and having fun.
Yeah. I mean, I take this question very seriously because you guys have had a long working relationship through a lot of successes. And I mean, I feel like there's something there.
At some point, I think we both probably benefited from having parents that had successful marriages and having seen what a successful marriage looks like. Because in a lot of ways, it's hard work keeping a relationship healthy and alive. And, you know, and there are times you go through, we've gone through, certainly, where, you're mad at each other for some crazy reason, and either you decide you're going to get over it and you're going to look past it and you're going to, keep working together and keep working at it, or you're not. And as you get through that and you kind of, you build that extra, whatever, layer of richness into a relationship, you just get to where you just really trust each other.
So what do you think are the different sort of skills or aspects that each of you bring to the partnership?
One of the things that happened within the first year of working together, which would now be, 20 years ago, was that Steve increasingly gravitated towards the technology, and I increasingly gravitated towards more the sales and marketing, the demand side of the business. And so what ended up happening over time is we ended up just picking very complementary areas.
The other thing I would add, and Neeraj is an amazing strategic thinker. In a big organization, you need very little strategy. And so having one person who's great at it as a CEO, it can really drive the organization. I'd much prefer to be out shoveling the gravel, right? So a simple thing, he's telling me where to shovel the gravel, I'm shoveling the gravel. And we're sort of wired that way. Like, I don't inherently think about kind of the long-term strategy. He just does and loves doing it. We both are very different on sort of that axis.
I would note that you are shoveling the gravel to the tune of $740 million net profit in the first quarter, or net revenue, I should say.
Yeah.
So not bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty good shoveling.
Right. Yeah, that's right. We've been
both
busy.
Of you. And tell me a little bit about that first business that you founded coming out of Cornell.
We started a business called Spinners, and it was the early days of the commercial internet. We started in 1995, and within a year or two, what happened is all of a sudden these large companies had a very significant interest in figuring out how to use the internet to drive their business. So we built, for the New York Times, when they launched the New York Times on the web, we built a number of the systems that ran the New York Times on the web. So these were just all different internet-based systems in the early days during the real infancy of the commercial internet, but it obviously, as you know, it rose quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. And then there was there was another business between that one and what became
Simplify
Warfare.
Mobile.
That's
right. There's a business called Simplify Mobile. So after that first one, we both sort of had that, glassy-eyed entrepreneur look where we figured we sort of hit one out of the park and let's start up something new. And we started a business called Simplify Mobile, which was trying to create a sort of a mobile phone offering for commercial businesses. And we pushed away hard at that for about a year. Leaving that, we were left in this kind of a point in our career where we were like, okay, what are we going to do next?
Yeah. Do you think it's easier for young entrepreneurs now or harder?
I think it's a legitimate career choice now. I think in our day, it was sort of not something that you were being groomed as a career choice for. Being successful at it, I don't know that that's any easier. It's always, I think it's, there's high failure rate in startups.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say is it's easier to give it a shot. I think I see a lot more folks doing it, but I it's still a challenging career.
Do you have a piece of advice for young entrepreneurs today?
It's easier to be an entrepreneur when you're younger because your cost of living is a lot lower, and so your risk-taking appetite is inherently higher. But I don't think you should force yourself to be an entrepreneur. I think you should become an entrepreneur because there's something you're particularly passionate about and excited about. Because typically, if you're just logically trying to think of a big business opportunity to pursue, quite often, the road between where you are and success is not straight. And if you don't really believe in what you're doing, if you're not having fun, if you're not super enthusiastic about it, those tough days can really take a toll on you. So the biggest thing I tell folks is, if you want to do something, you should just absolutely go for it. Realize your risk is actually a lot lower when you're younger. That said, you should really do something you believe in.
Yeah. So last couple of questions I want to talk about in a little bit more detail, Wayfair's recent major expansions, because you're bringing, 1,000 jobs to customer service centers that you'll be opening in Maine?
On the customer service center front, we've just opened one just in the last couple months in Texas, and we've announced that we're opening two centers in the next few months, one in Bangor and one in Brunswick, Maine.
Yeah. Is Boston going to be Wayfair headquarters for time to come?
Well, Boston's absolutely our headquarters. So we today in Back Bay in Boston in Copley Square, we have an office space that's over 350,000 square feet, and we have thousands of people who work there. And so it's absolutely our headquarters.
Yeah, I mean, so you see this as a good place for the company to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, we love being in Boston. We both live right in the city. I think, you know, that we have an unbelievable team, and we're in a market where we can be a really attractive employer. And so it's a very nice pairing.
So we were just doing some homework on the way over here to put things in context. We saw that that Amazon reported for 2015 $105 billion. In revenue, and you guys were for 2015. You guys were at $2 billion. So you know, I'm just curious: are you aiming for Amazon level sales one day?
You know, Amazon's obviously focused on all these general merchandise, consumable, basic retail categories. So we really focus on home, and so home is about 8% of U.S. retail. And 8% of retail in every market we're in. Home is an incredibly good market in the sense that the consumer really cares. She cares a ton about her home. She wants to find just the perfect item. So we want to be the dominant player in home. But we don't really have aspirations to go after these other categories. So our real goal is to be the preeminent brand, the top of mind brand, the loved brand in home.
Did Jeff Bezos say that about books at one time? I can't remember. So finally, again, I was love learning from the experience of people like you who've charted unique and successful paths. I'm just wondering if you could share a story of a particular time where you faced a challenge that was unexpected, and you know, kind of how you overcame it, and you know, what you learned from it.
I think we're always trying to push the edge of new things, to go faster, to try to be ambitious. And inherently, you run into problems all the time. And so our general attitude is, you know, that's not a big deal. It should be expected. You should try things. A lot of things will fail. Just make sure you figure out that they're failing and try something else. And, you know, you solve problems by working with others, by collaborating. And so we've been able to build a large team of people who take that approach. And then they solve problems by brainstorming ideas and trying them and measuring them.
You know, I look back on our career, I think one of the harder things as a young guy to overcome is trying to get to where you're more comfortable being told that something is failing and you're realistic about it. I don't know, when I look back on kind of my maturing as an entrepreneur, getting to the point where I can be honest with the team and with myself and about what's going on has led to just, you know, better success.
That's Steve Conine and Niraj Shah. They are the co-founders of Boston-based Wayfair. Now, e-commerce is a very rough and tumble business. When we talked to them earlier this summer, Wayfair was riding high, but last week the company reported its second quarter earnings, a net loss of 43 cents per share, while expenses grew 69%. Niraj Shah attributed the loss to adding more employees, their growth they're talking about in that interview, warehouse space, and making additional investments overseas. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.